experience would go running on side trails all day if you let them, and Carr didn't look like he was in the mood for a linguistics lesson. 3PO turned around to face her.
He has identified himself as Air Without Space Control, Mr. Shaeta, and asked our identity and cargo.
Tell him we're the freighter Hap Camber, Card said. We're here to buy some supplies and power.
3PO turned back to him, his posture indicating uncertainty.
But, sir, this ship is named the Wild Card. Its engine transponder code is...
has been carefully altered.
The pilot interrupted sharply.
Come on, they're waiting. Patience, Duncan,
Card said.
We're in no particular hurry, and I doubt Air Without Control has anything better to do right now. Just deliver the message as stated, 3PO.
No, wait.
He interrupted himself, a sly smile twitching at the corners of his mouth.
You said this was the dominant Jarillian dialect. Are there any others?
Several, sir. Unfortunately, I am versed in only two.
Good enough, Card said. Deliver our answer in one of them.
He settled himself back in his chair.
Let's see how far they're prepared to go with this game.
3PO delivered the message, and for a long moment the comm was silent.
Attention, unidentified freighter,
a voice growled reluctantly in Basic.
This is Air Without Space Control. State your identity and cargo.
Card smiled.
Apparently not very far,
he commented, keying his transmit key.
Air Without Control, this is the freighter Hab Camber, he said. No cargo, we're just passing through, and hoped we could buy some supplies and power.
Yeah, what sort of supplies?
Do you handle merchandising duties as well as space control?
No, I just do the traffic,
the other growled, sounding more annoyed than ever.
Let's hear your bid for landing rights.
Shaeta blinked.
Landing rights?
She muttered. The controller had sharp ears.
Yes, landing rights! And that little crack is going to cost you an extra 300!
Shaeta felt her mouth drop open. Crack? What crack? She filled her lungs for a nasty retort of her own.
We'll bid 1,000,
Card said, warning her with a glance. The controller snorted audibly.
For a freighter that size, you're either joking or a fool.
Hasishi hissed something under her breath.
Or perhaps merely a poor independent trader, Card suggested. What if I make it 1,100?
What if you make it 15? That's New Republic currency, too.
Of course. 1,500. Agreed.
Landing pad 28,
the controller said, his grudging annoyance replaced now by open gloating. Briefly, Shaeta wondered how much of that 1,500 would be going directly into his pocket.
Beacon'll guide you in. The money's due on arrival.
Thank you, Card said. Hab Camber out.
He keyed off the comm. Jin?
Beacon come on, Captain,
the older man at the comm station reported, squinting at his displays.
They guiding us in.
Key the vector over to the helm,
Card instructed.
Duncan, take us in. Watch out for fighters. Mara said they sometimes send escorts for unfamiliar ships.
Right,
the pilot acknowledged. Card looked at Shaeta.
You game for a little walk around once we're down?
Shaeta shrugged.
We junior crew drones are only here to serve. Where are we going?
A Tapcalf called the Thruster Burn, Card told her. Assuming my map is correct, it's only a couple of blocks from the landing pad we've been assigned. The man I'm hoping to meet should be there.
I didn't think we needed any supplies this soon,
Shaeta said.
Who are we meeting, and why?
a vicious yet cultured Corellian crime lord named Krev Bombassa, Card said. He runs most of the illegal operations in this part of Cathol sector.
And we need his help?
Not particularly, Card said. But getting his permission to travel through the area would make things easier.
Ah,
Shada said, frowning at his profile. This didn't sound like the casually fearless Talon Card she'd heard so many stories about from Mazik and other smugglers.
We're worried about some things being easy, are we?
He smiled. Always, he said. His tone was light, but Shada could hear an odd hollowness behind it.
Captain Card,
3PO spoke up hesitantly.
Will you be needing my services on this visit?
Card smiled. No, 3PO, thank you, he assured the droid. As I said, Basic is the official language down there. You can stay on the ship with the others. The droid seemed to wilt with relief.
Thank you, sir.
Card shifted his attention back to Shada. We'll go lightly armed, sidearm blasters only.
Understood, Shada said. But I'll let you carry the blaster.
Worried about things getting violent?
Denkin put in.
Not at all,
Shada said coolly, getting up from her seat and heading for the bridge door.
I just prefer that my opponents not know what direction the violence is going to come from. I'll be in my cabin, Card. Let me know when you're ready.
Twenty minutes later, they were down. 15 minutes after that, upon payment of their landing fee and a brief negotiation regarding additional protection costs with a trio of white-uniformed Pembroke security legionnaires, Card and Shada were walking down the streets of the Erwithat spaceport. It was not, to Card's mind, what one would exactly call an inspiring place. Even at midday, a haze seemed to shroud the whole city, diffusing the sunlight and adding a dankness to the occasional breezes that stirred the hot air without any perceptible cooling effect. The ground was composed of wet sand, molecular compressed where walkways were needed, a far cry from the permacrete that was the modern construction standard. The buildings lining the walkways were made from some kind of plain but solid-looking white stone. Its one-time cleanliness now marred by the brown and green mottlings of dirt and mold. A sprinkling of pedestrians roamed the streets, most showing the same general deterioration as the spaceport itself. And here and there a hurrying swoop or land speeder could be glimpsed between the buildings. It was, in short, very much the way Mara's report from 7 years ago had painted it, except probably a little shabbier.
Terrific place,
Shada commented from beside him.
I get the feeling I'm a little overdressed.
Card smiled. Dressed in a form-fitting dress, glittering with subdued blue lights, she did indeed stand out dramatically against the general drabness.
Don't worry about it, he assured her. As I said earlier, Bombassa is a cultured sort of crime lord. You can never be too overdressed for that time.
He glanced at her.
Though, personally, I have to say I prefer the silver and dark red outfit you wore when we first met at the Whistler's Whirlpool on Trogon.
I remember that outfit,
she said, her voice oddly distant.
It was the first one Mazik bought me after I became his bodyguard.
Mazik always did have good taste, Card agreed. You know, you still haven't told me why you left his service so suddenly.
You haven't told me anything about this Georges Cardass character we're looking for,
Shada countered.
Keep your voice down,
Card said sharply, glancing around them. There didn't seem to be anyone within earshot, but that didn't necessarily mean anything.
That's not a name you want to casually toss around here.
Even staring straight ahead, he could feel Shada's eyes on him.
He's really got you spooked, hasn't he?
She said quietly.
You weren't exactly thrilled about all this when Calrissian talked you into hunting him down. But he's really got you spooked.
You'll understand someday, Card told her. After I'm able to tell you the whole story.
She shrugged, her shoulder brushing briefly up against his arm with the motion.
Let's compromise,
she suggested.
Once we're off Pembrick, you can tell me half the story.
Interesting proposal, Card said. Agreed. But only if you in turn tell me half the reason why you left Mazik.
Well,
she hesitated.
Sure.
They turned a corner, and Card felt his mouth twitch. A long block away, fronting onto an open square, was the entrance to the Thruster Burn Tap Calf. Parked in front of it were perhaps 20 stripped-down speeder bikes. On the other hand, he said quietly, getting off Pembrick may not be quite as easy as we hoped.
Looks like a swoop gang's having a meeting in there,
Shada commented.
They are the sentries, to the left, under the overhang.
I see them,
Card said. There were four of them. Large, tough-looking young men in reddish-brown jackets sitting astride their swoops. They were pretending to talk together, but it was clear that their full attention was aimed in the newcomer's direction.
It's not too late to scrub this,
Shada murmured.
We can go back to the ship, get out of here, and take our chances with whatever Bombassa decides to throw at us.
Card shook his head minutely.
We've been objects of official curiosity ever since we landed. If we try to leave now, Bombassa's people will intercept us.
In that case, our best bet is to walk right up to the place like we own it,
Shada said briskly.
Keep your hand near your blaster. That'll keep their attention on you. Not close enough that they try to draw first, though. If it comes to a fight, let me throw the first punch. And if it looks like I'm losing badly, and you get an opening, make a run for it.
Understood,
Card said, finding himself amused despite the seriousness of the situation. Shada had mostly kept to herself aboard the Wild Card, not joining into the normal shipboard camaraderie or showing any real interest in getting to know the crew. But yet here, she was slipping back into the role of bodyguard, preparing to defend Card's life even at the cost of her own. What struck him the most was the sense that down deep, she genuinely meant it. The four sentries let them get to within a few meters of the rows of parked swoops before saying anything.
Tap calf's closed,
one of them called.
That's all right,
Card said, not breaking stride, as he glanced incuriously over at them.
We're not thirsty.
The swoopers had looked like they were lounging casually on their vehicles. They weren't. Before Card and Shada had taken two more steps, they'd zoomed across the square and skidded to a halt between the newcomers and the parked swoops.
I said the place is closed,
the one who'd spoken repeated darkly. The long maneuvering veins of his swoop pointed with unsubtle threat directly at Card's chest.
Go away!
Card shook his head.
Sorry, we have business with Krev Bombassa that can't wait.
One of the others snorted.
Listen to him, he said derisively. He thinks he can just walk in on Bombassa anytime he wants. Pretty funny, huh, Langry?
Hilarious,
the spokesman agreed, his face not showing any evidence of humor.
Last chance, Merc. Leave in one piece or in a bunch of them.
Lord Bombassa is going to be very displeased if you don't let us in,
Card warned.
Yeah?
Langry sneered, nudging a swoop forward.
Like I'm really scared.
You should be,
Card said, taking a step backward as the maneuvering veins poked perilously close to his chest. Shada, he noted peripherally, hadn't moved backward with him, but was still standing where he'd left her, shrinking wide-eyed back from the swoop, snorting and vibrating its way alongside her, as if terrified by its presence.
Lord Bombassa doesn't like to be kept waiting.
Then I guess we ought to hurry up and put you in a box for him,
Langry said, sneering a little harder. He nudged the swoop forward another meter, forcing Card to take another rapid step backward. Not quite rapid enough. The tips of the maneuvering vanes jabbed sharply against his chest before he could get out of the way. One of the other swoopers chortled, grinning maliciously. Langry gave the swoop another burst of the throttle, clearly intent on knocking Card down this time. The movement brought him directly alongside Shaeta, and in that instant, she struck. It was doubtful Langry even saw it coming. One moment, Shaeta was standing there, transfixed, like a frightened animal in a hunter's sights. The next moment, she had swung her left leg back, rotated her upper body toward the swoop, and slammed her right fist into the side of his neck. There may have been a distinctive pop accompanying the flat crack of the blow. Card wasn't sure. What he was sure of, as Langry did a sideways cartwheel off his swoop onto the ground, was that this one was definitely out of the fight. The other three had excellent reflexes. Before Langry even hit the sand, they had twisted their handlebars around and roared off in different directions across the square, forestalling any attempt Shaeta might have made to similarly take them down. Cutting close to the surrounding buildings, they curved around and stopped short, turning their swoops around to point towards Shaeta.
Get out of the way!
Shaeta snapped to Card, moving to the center of the square and dropping into a low combat stance. Turning her head back and forth, she looked at each of the swoopers in turn, as if daring them to take her on. For a few seconds, they seemed to ignore her challenge as they discussed the situation in a hand signal code Carr didn't recognize. Taking advantage of the lull, he backed up until he reached the edge of the square. So far, the swoopers hadn't shown any inclination to draw the weapons they were undoubtedly carrying, but that could change at any time. Watching them closely, he dropped his hand to his blaster.
I don't think so,
a gruff voice said in his ear. Carefully, Card turned his head, the caution dictated by the hard muzzle suddenly pressed against the small of his back. Three hard-faced men in Security Legion uniforms were standing there, the last of them in the process of closing the concealed doorway that had opened up in the building behind him.
You're just in time, Legionnaire,
Card said to the leader. This was probably futile, but he had to try.
My friend's in danger out there.
Yeah,
the other said, pulling Card's blaster from its holster.
Looked to me like she was the one who started it. Anyway, trying to bluster your way in to see Bombasa is a crime all by itself around here.
Even if Bombasa decides he's glad we dropped in to visit, Card countered, you'll be in serious trouble.
Nah,
the Legionnaire said, sticking the appropriated blaster into his belt and coming around to Card's side.
That's why we got these,
he added, hefting his weapon as he stepped a prudent meter away from his prisoner. It was, Card saw now, not a blaster, but an old Mersonne tangle gun.
If Bombasa decides he wants to see you, hey, we just cut you loose. If he doesn't,
he grinned evilly,
then you're already wrapped for burial. Real convenient.
He gestured with the tangle gun.
Now shut up. I want to watch this.
Throat tight with frustration, Card turned back to the square. The Wild Card's crew wouldn't be able to get here fast enough to help, even if he could get to his comlink to alert them. He could only hope that Shaeta was as good as she claimed. And at that moment, their private consultation finished, the swoopers attacked. They didn't all charge at once, as Card had rather expected them to, suspecting perhaps that Shaeta would try to maneuver them into head-on collisions if they did that. Two of them, instead, began tracing out a loose, encircling ring around her, while the third drove hard and straight directly in. Shaeta stood her ground, but just before the maneuvering vanes reached her chest, she dropped back flat onto her back. The thug whooped with glee as his swoop shot past over her, a triumphal shout that turned into a squawk of surprise as Shaeta tucked her legs to her chest and kicked hard straight up. catching the swoop just forward of the directional thrust nozzles and bucking the swooper right out of the saddle. It only took a second for him to get himself reseated and regain control. But in the enclosed area of the square, that was a half second too long. And with a horrendous crash, both Swoop and Thug slammed full bore into one of the buildings. The Legionnaire beside Card whistled softly.
That's two, he commented. She's good.
Card didn't reply. Shada was back on her feet now, and the two remaining Swoops had pulled their circle a little farther back, as if afraid to let her get too close. If they decided that she wasn't worth the risk of another wreck and pulled their blasters... And then he noticed one of the Swoopers glaring at the trio of Legionnaires. And with that single look, he realized that the use of blasters was now completely out of the question. With this many witnesses watching, pride alone dictated that they deal with her without weapons. The two Swoops were circling.
Come on, Barksy, the head Legionnaire called. Not afraid, are you?
Scrub it, Merc!
One of the Swoopers snapped back.
That's Lieutenant Merc to you, scum,
the Legionnaire murmured under his breath. Abruptly, Barksy swung his swoop out of the circle and charged inward. The same basic technique his predecessor had tried, and Card found himself holding his breath as Shada again fell back onto the sand ahead of its advance. Surely the Swooper couldn't be so stupid as to try the same trick again. He wasn't. Even as Shada hit the ground, he pulled back hard on his handlebar controls, the Swoop's nose rearing up as the vehicle slid a couple of meters farther before pulling to a hard stop. With a triumphal shout, he swiveled 180 degrees and brought the Swoop's nose down hard on the spot where Shada had landed. But Shada was no longer there. Instead of simply hitting the sand and staying there as she had the last time, she had instead thrown her body into a convulsive wave-like movement as she hit the ground, her arching back and legs bouncing her off the sand and up into an impossible-looking hand and foot grip on the underside of the swoop. Somehow, she managed to hold on through the spin and nose slam, and as the swooper leaned over, open-mouthed for a closer look at the empty ground where his victim should have been, she unhooked one of her feet from its perch and landed a solid kick against the side of his head. Beside Card, the lieutenant clucked his tongue.
I don't believe it,
he muttered, clearly as stunned as Barksy had been before Shada's kick cleaned all confusion from his mind.
Who is this Bashy anyway?
One of the best in the business,
Card assured him, pitching his voice in the sort of low, confidential tone that just naturally seemed to go along with the half-step he took toward the man. Another step the same size, he estimated, and he would be close enough.
Actually, that was nothing,
he added, lowering his voice still more and simultaneously taking that extra half-step.
Wait till you see what she does to this one.
He threw a careful glance to his side. The lieutenant was hooked all right, staring in glassy-eyed fascination at the drama in the square, waiting to see what magic the mysterious woman would pull next from her sleeve. The last swooper seemed to make up his mind. Pulling out of his circle at the far end of the square, he leaned low over his handlebar controllers and charged. Shada feinted left and then dodged right, the end of the jutting thrust nozzles missing her hip by bare centimeters. The swooper spun the vehicle hard around, clearly hoping to catch her from the side with the long nose of the swoop. But he had misjudged his speed, and the swinging maneuvering Baines scythed past her with plenty of room to spare. It took him a few more meters to kill his spin and momentum, bringing himself to a halt no more than 3 meters from Card and the Legionnaires. He swiveled around again to face Shada, shoulders hunched with anticipation. And with a smoothly casual movement, Card plucked the tangle gun from the Legionnaire's hand and fired. The swooper screeched an air-blistering curse as the semi-plastic webbing slammed into his back, whipping around him and pinioning his arm solidly to his sides.
As you were, gentlemen, Card said mildly,
taking a long step away from the Legionnaires and shifting his aim to cover them.
Cute,
the lieutenant said. Oddly enough, he didn't seem particularly upset.
Real cute.
I thought you'd like it,
Card said, nodding to the other two Legionnaires. Your weapons on the ground, please.
That won't be necessary,
a suave voice said from somewhere above him. Card risked a quick glance, but he could see no one.
No, I'm not there,
the voice assured him, a touch of amusement in his tone.
I've been watching your performance from inside my casino, and I must admit to being impressed by your work. Tell me, what is it you want here?
To see you, of course, Lord Bombassa,
Card said to the hidden speaker.
I had hoped to collect on an old debt.
The lieutenant made an uncomfortable-sounding noise in his throat, but Bombassa merely laughed.
I am aware of no debt I owe you, my friend. But by all means, let us talk about it. Lieutenant Maxity?
Sir?
The lieutenant said, straightening automatically to attention.
Give the gentleman back his blaster, and escort him and the lady into the casino, and have your men clean the garbage out of the square.
The interior of the thruster burn was a sharp contrast to the climate outside. A sharp contrast, for that matter, with nearly every low-rent cantina and tap calf Shada had ever been in. The air was cool and comfortably dry, and while the booths lining the walls were dark enough to ensure privacy, the rest of the tap calf was bright and almost cheerful. Not that the current clientele was the sort that would appreciate such homey touches. There were about 20 of them, stamped template copies of the four she disposed of outside, all glaring balefully at the newcomers from their group of tables in one of the corners by the curved bar. Briefly, Shada wondered if Bombassa had told them their sentries were being unceremoniously carted out of the square outside, but quickly dismissed the thought. A man who owned this kind of tap calf would be unlikely to risk it by deliberately inviting a fight inside. Nevertheless, she kept an eye on the swoopers as Lieutenant Maxity led them across the main area to an unobtrusive door at the back of the dance floor. The door opened as they approached, giving them a glimpse of a small back room, and a large, dark-eyed human stepped out. He threw a measuring glance at Card, an even longer look at Shada, and then nodded to the Legionnaire.
Thanks,
he said to the latter, dismissing him with that single word, then looked back at Card.
Come on in,
he invited, stepping aside to let them pass. The back room had been fitted out as a compact casino, with four tables around which a dozen or so beings of various species were busily engaged in a variety of card and dice games. With their minds and hopes pinned to their money, it was doubtful any of them even realized anyone new had come in. All except one. A short, pudgy human with thin, stick-like arms. He sat alone at the largest table, his slightly bulging eyes focused unblinkingly on Card and Shada as they stepped into the room. Two large men with the same bodyguard look as the one now closing the door behind them stood at attention beside the pudgy man's chair, also eyeing the newcomers. Shada grimaced, not liking this at all. But Card didn't hesitate.
Good day, Lord Bombassa,
he said, stepping right up to the edge of the table.
Thank you for seeing us on such short notice.
The two bodyguards seemed tense, but Bombassa merely smiled thinly.
Like the legendary Rustus Call, I am always available to those who intrigue me,
he said smoothly.
And you do indeed intrigue me.
His insect-like eyes shifted to Shada.
Though for a moment there, I thought you had run out of tricks,
he added.
If your companion hadn't snatched the lieutenant's tangle gun, you would have been in trouble.
Hardly, Shada told him coolly. I caught a reflection of him moving toward the Legionnaires and guessed he was about to try something. If it didn't work, he was going to need my help right away, and the swooper would keep.
Bombasa shook his head admiringly.
An amazing display, my dear. Truly amazing. Though I'm afraid that in the process you've ruined your gown. Perhaps I can arrange to have it cleaned before your departure?
That's most generous of you, my lord, Card said before she could answer. But I'm afraid we won't be able to stay on Pembroke that long.
Bombasa smiled again, but this time there was a distinct glint of menace to the expression.
That remains to be seen, my friend,
he warned darkly.
And if you're another New Republic or Cathol sector emissary seeking to annex my territory, you may find your departure considerably delayed.
I have no ties to any governmental group, Card assured him. I'm merely a private citizen, here to ask a favor.
Indeed,
Bombasa said, toying idly with the subtly glittering throat pendant around his neck.
I have the distinct impression you don't realize what my favors cost.
I believe you'll find this one has already been paid for, Card countered. And it is only a small favor, after all. We have an errand to run inside your cartel's territory, and we'd like safe passage through your various pirate and hijacking gangs until we've completed it.
Bombasa's eyes widened politely.
Is that all?
He said.
Come, come, my dear sir. A large, tempting target like your freighter, and you want safe passage?
He shook his head sadly.
No, you don't understand my fee scale at all.
Shada felt her muscles tensing, consciously relaxed them. All three bodyguards were armed and competent-looking, but if nudge came to punch, she doubted any of them had ever faced a Mistral before. Unfortunately, unlike the case with the swoopers, she wouldn't have the luxury of leaving them damaged but alive. She would have to take out the one behind them first.
My mistake, Card said, his tone almost offhanded. I assumed that when someone had saved your life, you would be more grateful.
Bombasa had been in the process of lifting a finger toward the bodyguard standing beside him. Now, at Card's words, he froze, the finger poised in midair.
What are you talking about?
He demanded cautiously.
I'm talking about a situation that occurred here a little over 6 years ago, Card said. One in which a rather dapper gentleman and a young lady with red-gold hair foiled an assassination plot against you.
For a pair of heartbeats, Bombasa continued to stare at Card. Shada threw a surreptitious glance at the two bodyguards, mentally plotting out her attack plan. And with a suddenness that startled her, Bombasa burst out laughing. The other gamblers in the casino paused in their activities, turning to gape momentarily at what was apparently an uncommon sound in their quietly desperate little world. Bombasa, still laughing, gave a hand signal, and the bodyguards visibly relaxed.
Ah, my friend,
he said, still chuckling.
My friend, indeed. So you're the mysterious chieftain the young lady spoke of when she refused to accept any payment.
I'm the one, Card said, nodding. I believe she also suggested that a man of your obvious breeding wouldn't mind carrying the debt until it could be properly repaid.
She did indeed.
Bombasa waved a thin hand at Shada.
And now you bring this one. I would never have expected there to even exist two such beautiful yet deadly ladies, let alone loyal to the same man.
He cocked an eye toward Shada.
Or are you committed to this man, my dear?
He added.
If you would be interested in discussing a change of career, I could make it well worth your while.
I'm not committed to anyone,
Shada said, the words hurting her throat as she said them.
But for the moment, I'm traveling with him.
Bombasa peered closely at her, as if trying to gauge her sincerity, then shrugged.
If you should change your mind, you have merely to come see me, he said. My door will always be open to you.
He returned his attention to Card.
You are right. I do indeed owe you, he said. Before you leave, I'll provide you with a special ID overlay for your ship that will identify you as being under my protection.
His lips compressed.
However, though it will certainly protect you from members of my cartel, it may at the same time create extra danger for you. Over the past year, a vicious new pirate gang has relocated to this area. One which we have so far been unable to either eliminate or bring under our control. I suspect they would consider a freighter under my protection to be a particularly intriguing challenge.
Card shrugged. As you pointed out earlier, we would be a tempting target regardless of that. We are, of course, not nearly as vulnerable as we appear.
I have no doubt of that,
Bombasa said.
However, the enemy is quite well equipped, with a sizable fleet of Soro sub-Corsair class assault starfighters, as well as a number of larger ships. If you can spare the time, perhaps you would allow my people to do some quick upgrades of your weaponry or shields.
I appreciate your offer, Card said. And if circumstances were otherwise, I would be all too happy to accept. But I'm afraid our errand is a pressing one, and we simply can't afford to take the time. Bombasa said.
Very well, then. Leave when you must. The ID overlay will be ready when you are.
He smiled slyly.
And of course, for you, there will be no exit visa required.
You're most generous, my lord, Card said, bowing slightly at the waist. Thank you, and the debt is now paid. Taking Shada's arm, he turned to go.
One other thing, my friend,
Bombasa called them back.
Neither of your associates gave me their names when they were here, nor would they tell me yours. I would appreciate it if you would satisfy my curiosity.
Beside her, Shada sensed Card brace himself. Of course, Lord Bombasa. My name is Talon Card. The pudgy figure seemed to sit up a little straighter.
Talon Card?
He breathed.
Indeed. Some of my business associates have spoken of you. Often at great length.
I'm sure they have, Card said. Particularly those Hutt agencies with whom your cartel has ties. For a moment, Bombasa's eyes narrowed. Then his expression cleared, and he smiled again.
The Hutts are right. You indeed know far more than is healthy for you. Still, as long as you don't seek to extend your organization into my territory, what have I to fear?
Nothing at all, my lord. Card agreed. Thank you for your hospitality. Perhaps we shall meet again someday.
Yes,
Bombasa said softly.
There is always that chance.
The Legionnaire Lieutenant Maxity offered to get them a ride back to their landing pad, but Card declined. It was only a short walk, after all. And after a taste of the Pembroke climate, the somewhat austere conditions aboard the Wild Card would seem that much more pleasant. Besides, after the tone of that last exchange with Bombasa, It wouldn't do to look as if they were hurrying to get away from him.
"Who's Rustus Call?"
Shada asked. With an effort, Card brought his mind back from dark visions of vengeful crime lords having second thoughts.
"Who?"
"Rustus Call,"
she repeated.
"Bombasa dropped the name right after we were shown in."
"He was a fictional character from some masterpiece of Corellian literature," Card said. "I forget which one. Bombasa is quite literate, or so I've heard. Apparently, he likes to consider himself a cultured sort of cutthroat." Shada snorted.
"Cultured? But he deals with huts."
Card shrugged.
"I agree. One reason the huts and I don't get along, I suppose."
For a minute, they walked in silence.
"You knew he was connected with the hut syndicates," Shada said. "Yet you told him who you were. Why?"
"I'm not expecting Bombasa to renege on his deal with us, if that's what you're worried about," Card said. "Cultured beings always repay their debts, and Mara and Lando did indeed save his life."
"The question wasn't so much about Bombasa as it was about you,"
Shada countered.
"He didn't need to know who you were, and I've seen your expertise at dodging questions you don't want to answer. So why did you tell him?"
"Because I'm guessing word of this encounter will get back to George Cardass," Card said quietly. "This way he'll know it's me who's coming to see him."
He sensed Shada frown.
"Excuse me, I thought the idea was for us to sneak up quietly on him."
"The idea is to see if he has a copy of the Ka'amas document," Card corrected her. "If we appear suddenly, without any warning, he's liable to simply kill all of us before we have a chance to talk to him."
"And if he does know we're coming?"
Shada retorted.
"Sounds to me like all it does is give him more preparation time."
"Exactly," Card said soberly. "And if he feels ready for us, he may be more inclined to listen before he shoots."
"You seem convinced he'll shoot."
Card hesitated. Should he tell her, he wondered, exactly why he'd allowed her to come on this trip? No, he decided. Not yet. At best, she would probably feel insulted or offended. At worst, she might refuse to go along with it at all.
"I think there's a good chance he will, yes," he said instead.
"Knowing that it's you?"
Card nodded.
"Knowing that it's me."
"Aha,"
Shada said.
"What did you do to this guy anyway?"
Card felt a muscle twitch in his jaw.
"I stole something from him," he told her. "Something he valued more than anything else in the universe. Probably more than he valued his own life."
They walked in silence for another few steps.
"Go on,"
Shada prompted. Card forced a smile.
"I only promised you half the story today," he reminded her, trying to put some lightness into his tone.
"That was it. Your turn."
"What, why I left Mazik?"
Shada shrugged.
"There's not much to tell. I left because a bodyguard who becomes a target herself can't do much good for anyone else."
So Shada had become a target. That was very interesting indeed.
"May I ask who's suicidal enough to be gunning for you?"
"Sure. Go ahead and ask,"
Shada said.
"You're not going to get an answer, though. Not until I get the rest of the Cardass story."
"Somehow I was expecting you to say that," Card murmured.
"So when do I get it?"
Card looked up through the haze at the dim glow of Pembroke's sun.
"Soon,"
he promised.
"Very soon."
Chapter 5
The sixth sumptuous hour of the 15th glorious day of the yearly Kanchen Sector Conference now begins.
The herald intoned, his deep voice echoing across the bowl-shaped field where the various delegates sat, squatted, lay, or crouched, according to their species' particular physiological design.
Let us hail and magnify the grandiose elector of Patrick Major, and bid him express his sublime and all-encompassing wisdom in his leading of this gathering.
The assembled beings called or growled their agreement with the herald's sentiment, all but Han. And lounging beside him on the feathery mat grass, Leia had to smile in private amusement. Coming out here had been Han's idea, after all. A temporary respite from the bitter dissension and gnawing suspicions that had been churning through the New Republic government ever since that partially destroyed copy of the Ka'amas document had come to light. And it had been a good idea, too. In the half-day since their arrival, Leia had already begun to feel the tension draining out of her. Getting away from Coruscant was exactly what she'd needed, and she'd taken great pains to mention that to her husband at least twice now, and to thank him for his thoughtfulness. At the moment, unfortunately, all her reassurances were falling on deaf ears. Once again, Han had failed to take into account what Leia privately referred to as the solo embarrassment factor.
And let us similarly hail and magnify our glorious visitors from the New Republic,
the herald continued, waving his hand in an expansive gesture toward where Han and Leia were stretched out.
May the sublime wisdom, awesome courage, and magnificent honor enlighten the sky above our gathering.
You forgot her uplifted eyebrows,
Han muttered under his breath, as the assembly roared out their greetings.
It's better than Coruscant,
Leia chided him gently, as she half rose and waved.
Come on, Han, be nice.
I'm waving.
Han grumbled, leaning up on one arm and waving reluctantly with the other.
I don't know why they have to do this every hour.
Would you rather have people accusing us of helping cover up attempted genocide?
Leia countered.
I'd rather they just left us alone,
Han said, giving one last wave and then dropping his hand back down. Leia lowered hers as well, and the approving roar of the delegates died away.
Patience, dear,
Leia said, as the herald bowed deeply and yielded the podium to the elaborately dressed grandiose elector.
It's only for the rest of the day. You can put up with it that long. Tomorrow we'll head over to Patrick Minor and get all that peace and quiet you promised me.
It just better be real peaceful and quiet,
Han warned, looking around at the crowd of delegates.
It will be,
Leia assured him, reaching over to squeeze his hand. They may be all pomp and pageantry here on Patrick Major, but over there among the tall grain farms, we probably won't find anyone who even recognizes us. Han snorted, but even as he did, Leia could sense a lightening of his mood.
Sure, he said. We'll see.
Carib?
With a wince of tired knees, Carib Devist got up from where he'd been crouching, careful not to bump into either of the two rows of tall grain pressing close around him.
I'm over here, Sabmin,
he called, waving his coring tool as high over the stalks as he could reach.
I see you,
Sabmin called back. There was the crackle of brittle leaves being brushed against, and then Sabmin emerged through a gap in the row.
I had to come, right?
He broke off, frowning at the tool in Carib's hand.
Uh-oh. Save the uh-ohs for polite company,
Carib said sourly.
Just say shabbat and mean it.
Sabmin hissed softly between his teeth.
How many colonies?
He asked.
So far just the one,
Carib said, waving the corer toward the tall grain stalk he'd been digging into.
And I did find an empress, so it's possible I got the whole infestation, but I wouldn't bet money on it. I'll alert the others,
Sabmin said.
Probably should get word to the Tri-Valley coordinator, too, in case this isn't the only valley the bugs are moving into.
Yeah, Carib eyed his brother.
And what wonderful news have you brought me?
Sadmin's lips compressed.
We just got confirmation from Bastion,
he said quietly.
New Republic High Councillor Leia Organa Solo is definitely over on Pacric Major, and the attack on her is definitely on.
Reflexively, Carib glanced up at the half-lit planet hanging in the sky overhead.
They must be crazy, he said. Attack a New Republic High Councillor just like that?
I don't think they really cared who they got to attack, so long as it was a New Republic official,
Sadmin said.
Apparently the Grandiose Elector sent out a blanket invitation to Coruscant asking for a representative. My guess is that the request was prodded by some Imperial plant, with an eye to the fact that we were already in place here and could act as backup. It was just luck that Gavrasim decided to send Organa Solo.
Here, Carib said darkly.
Luck? Did this come over Grand Admiral Thrawn's personal authorization? I don't know,
Sadmin said.
The notice didn't say. But it has to have come from him, doesn't it? I mean, if he's in command, then he's in command. I suppose so,
Carib conceded reluctantly. So there it was. The war was about to be brought suddenly and violently to the Pacric system. Right to their doorstep. And the long wait was over. The quiet existence of Imperial Sleeper Cell Genth 44 was about to come to an end.
You say we're the backup. Who's the primary?
I don't know,
Sadmin said.
Some tag team in from Bastion for the occasion, I guess.
And when is it supposed to happen?
Tomorrow,
Sadmin said.
Organa Solo and her husband are supposed to be coming over here to Minor once the conference breaks up.
And there's no indication whether the attack is real or just supposed to look real?
Sadmin gave him a startled look, an expression that quickly turned knowing and thoughtful.
Interesting point, he said. With Thrawn involved, you can't take anything for granted, can you? No, all I know is that there's an attack coming, and that we're supposed to stand by ready in case Solo's better or luckier than expected.
Carib grimaced.
I suppose even Solo's luck has to run out sooner or later. Yeah.
Sadmin eyed him suspiciously.
What are you thinking?
Carib looked up at the sky again.
I'm thinking we have to play this by ear,
he said quietly.
One thing's for sure, though. If the battle comes anywhere near our valley, no matter who's winning, we're definitely not going to just sit by and watch. We've invested too much here to let it go without a fight.
Sadmin nodded.
Understood, he said soberly. I'll pass the word to the others. Whatever happens tomorrow, we'll be ready.
Ahead, through the alien greenery, a stand of gnarled trees brushed past the screen to Pelion's left, and the AT-AT simulator bucked to the right in response.
Watch those trees, Admiral,
Major Rain's voice warned in his helmet headphone.
You probably won't knock yourself over that way, but I've seen walkers get hung up so bad you had to send a couple of troopers down to blow the tree off at the roots. Takes time, and you're a sitting flink until you get free.
Acknowledged,
Pelion said, easing over away from the trees. Simulated AT-AT combat, frustrating though it could be sometimes, was far enough outside his normal command duties that it was actually a form of relaxation for him. Though, of course, nothing that included combat was ever truly outside a Supreme Commander's duties. The better Pelion understood how mechanized equipment handled on difficult terrain, the better he would know how to deploy them in future operations. Assuming, of course, the Empire ever again had occasion to launch ground assaults. Firmly, he shook the thought away. One of the reasons for coming down here, after all, had been to distract himself from the continued and frustrating lack of response to his peace offer on the New Republic's part. He was past the stand of trees now. Easing back on his speed, he keyed for a side view to see how Rains was handling the jungle. Very straightforwardly, actually. Keeping an eye farther ahead than Pelion was doing, he was using his forward laser cannon to cut down potential obstacles well before they became a problem. A fairly noisy technique, of course, and one that gave any enemies that much more advanced warning. On the other hand, AT-ATs were hardly the weapon of choice where stealth was required, and Rain's method was definitely moving him through the jungle faster than Pelion. Lifting his gaze, trying to stifle the reflexive impulse to watch where his AT-AT was about to step, he squeezed off a few tentative shots.
"That's the way, Admiral,"
Rain said approvingly.
"Just try to anticipate where the trouble's going to be before you're too close to aim the guns where they can do any good."
Pelion grunted.
"Better yet, avoid using AT-ATs entirely in this situation."
"Whatever we can,"
Rain said.
"Unfortunately, troublemakers like to hide themselves in places like this and then put up energy shields over their heads. Besides, there's nothing like an AT-AT clumping through the trees to scare the sneer off someone's face."
There was a click from the headset.
"Admiral, this is Ardiff,"
the Chimera's captain's voice came.
"Lieutenant Mavron is on his way in."
There was just the briefest pause.
"He reports, sir, that he has a vector."
Pelion felt his eyes narrow. Mavron's mission had been a long shot, one last attempt to find out something about the force that had hit them 6 days ago. If he said he'd found a vector...
"Have him report to Ready Room 14 as soon as he docks,"
he instructed Ardiff, shutting off the simulator.
"I'll meet you there."
Ardiff was waiting alone in the ready room when Pelion arrived. "I assumed this was to be a private meeting, so I cleared the other pilots out," he explained. "Is this about that holonet search?"
"I hope so,"
Pelion said, waving him to one of the chairs around the central monitor table and sitting down himself.
"Ah, Lieutenant,"
he added, as the door slid open and Mavron stepped inside.
"Welcome home. A vector, you said?"
"Yes, sir," Mavron said, setting a datapad down on the monitor table and easing himself into a chair with the peculiar stiffness of a man who has been sitting in a starfighter cockpit for too long.
"The holonet relay at Horska did indeed still have their records for transmissions from this area just after that raid against us."
"You were able to pull them all, I presume?"
Pelion asked, picking up the datapad.
"Yes, sir," Mavron said. "Unfortunately, I couldn't get any names, but I did get endpoints for the transmissions."
He nodded toward the datapad.
"I took the liberty of sifting through them on the way back. The one I marked struck me as the most interesting."
Pelion felt his jaw tighten as he found the lieutenant's mark.
"Bastion,"
Ardiff rumbled deep in his throat. "So it was an Imperial behind that attack."
"There's more," Mavron said. "The original endpoint was Bastion, but then it got relayed a few more times and wound up somewhere in the Croctar system."
"Croctar system?" Ardiff said, frowning.
"That's deep in New Republic territory. What would someone from Bastion be doing there?" "I wondered that too," Mavron said, his voice suddenly grim. "So I stopped off at Corsito on the way back here and pulled a copy of the Tri-Nebulon for that day. If the timings are correct, a few hours after that transmission, the unified factions of Croctar announced that a treaty had been negotiated between themselves and the Empire. The mediator of record, well, according to Lord Superior Boss Mihi, it was Grand Admiral Thrawn."
An icy chill ran up Pelion's back.
"That's impossible," he said,
his voice sounding strange in his ears.
"Thrawn is dead. I watched him die."
"Yes, sir,"
Mavron said, nodding.
"But according to the report..."
"I watched him die,"
Pelion thundered. The sudden outburst surprised even him. It certainly startled Ardiff and Mavron.
"Yes, sir, we know," Ardiff said.
"Obviously it's some kind of trick. Lieutenant, I imagine the rest can wait until you file your complete report. Why don't you go get yourself cleaned up?"
"Thank you, sir,"
Mavron said, clearly glad to be given the opportunity to escape.
"I'll have my report filed within an hour."
"Very good," Arif nodded. Dismissed. He waited until Mavron had gone, and then the door was once again closed before speaking.
It is a trick, Admiral, he said to Pelion. It has to be.
With an effort,